It's Friday, July 30th. The next national shortage could be moving boxes. We start here. Millions of Americans are anxiously wondering if they're about to be evicted.
If I don't have any type of money for him on the first, that he's going to be putting out a 5 to 10 day eviction notice.
A federal eviction moratorium expires tomorrow night. We'll talk to someone up against the deadline. Our allies in Afghanistan are facing eviction too, for men with guns.
The big issue here is that they're running out of time.
Why thousands of our soldiers' former translators are begging for a lift out of the country. And he claimed it was the world's most advanced car. After all, it could roll down a ramp.
Today's criminal charges against Milton are where the rubber meets the road.
Now, the man who was supposed to revolutionize electric vehicles is under arrest. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. For the last year, we've had protections in place for people who lost income to the pandemic. Unemployment benefits, student loan pauses, housing protections. It's not these people's fault they lost work, it's COVID's. And recently, the thinking was, the job market is coming back. We're not going to need all these programs anymore. Then this week happened.
The surge in Delta infections prompting the CDC to make an about-face on mask guidance.
Walt Disney and Disneyland reinstating their mask policies starting Friday for everyone age 2 and up.
Now, vaccinated Americans are still way less likely to get sick from the Delta variant, but the fact that even vaccinated people can spread this strain so much more easily has huge implications, not just for our health, but our economic recovery. People aren't going to spend as much money indoors at restaurants. They're not going to get on planes. I just canceled a trip myself because I didn't want to inadvertently give the virus to my immunocompromised wife. But as business slows down because of all that, a nationwide halt on evictions is still set to expire.
The dire situation for millions of American families as a pandemic-era eviction moratorium ends on Saturday.
That means that as soon as tomorrow night, midnight on August 1st, millions of renters could once again be facing evictions in this country. So we're going to check in with one of them today. Tariana Julian Clark lives in Louisiana. She's joining us from home. Tariana, where are you right now?
I live in Harvey, Louisiana, which is a little bit out of New Orleans. I stay in a townhouse, a two-bedroom home.
Cool. And who's there with you? Is it just you?
At the moment, it's me and my animals. And my daughters are here, but they're gone for the summer. I took them away. You know, it was hot and my AC had broken my home, so there's no condition for them. But, you know, I have to do what I have to do with my dogs.
Right. Okay, so you're getting by then. Can you just walk me through what the last year has been like for you?
Okay, so starting through COVID, I was working at a nonprofit to help aid patients, and I was a peer mediator, a specialist that helped people with their troubles, how they do things, and that's where it all started. So I lost that job. They literally fired everybody in the whole facility. Mm. Once that happened, I was literally out of job, sleeping in the car, being at a park. Like, I slept in, you know, at the lake in, you know, in New Orleans with my kids. Not eating for weeks.
Oh, you were living in the car with your children.
The whole 2020, from January to January.
Wow.
Like, it was hard. Like, my family did not want people to come in their house because it was COVID. All our family members are old, you know, and we have kids. And they were like, really, like, they were like, no, it's kids. Mm-mm. They sneeze all day. Like, we don't know what they're bringing. You know, it was just a lot. And they couldn't support us and support themselves. And it was just a lot going on. That was a new job after that where I had worked at Rosenwald Collegiate Academy, and I was a teacher there, assistant teacher for the paraplegic, and I literally saved up, this was after Christmas, I saved up January, the whole month of January, I didn't spend a dollar, and I saved that to put down on the deposit in the first month rent, which is about $1,400, I got support from a group to help me with my whole home, so everything in my home is donated.
Which must have felt like a godsend after a year of that, right? So I'm thinking,
right.
Like, you're in 2021 now. You got a place of your own. You're feeling like, okay, finally, like, putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
What happened next?
That was great. I did that for a while, but then I wound up getting sick in April, right before my birthday. I got sick, and it was bad. I don't know if it was COVID or not, which sucked, because I was just, like, on a roll to pay my bills and having things, you know, situated. My girls was happy. You know, everything was good. And now I'm severely sick and can't get up. Like, I literally was passing out on the way to work, and I had to call him, like, I'm sorry, I cannot make it. I threw up and I passed out at the gas station. Like, I'm not going to be able to come. And, you know, of course, like, they're going to look at me like, you missed, like, 2 weeks of work so far. Like, when are you going to feel better? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I haven't started feeling better yet. You know, I'm literally bedbound. And I was like that to almost, like, the middle of May. And, like, it was too late at that point because school's over. And they're like, well, look, we're looking for somebody who can be here. Which I understand because you have children that's disabled, children that, you know, who need special attention all day, every day. You know, you need somebody who's going to be able to be present. And that wasn't me in that, you know, in that time. And I wish it could have been because I love my job. Like, I love what I do. But, like, I couldn't have done it. And, you know, I couldn't help it. You know, like, what else can I do? Like, I'm a, you know, 27-year-old. I had two girls. I'm trying to feed them. I'm trying to survive on the bare minimum of the, like, unemployment. Like, I was getting $240 or $250.
Wait, how much is rent? Unemployment, $250. How much is your rent?
My rent is $775.
$775, okay.
I have bills that stack to the roof. Like, lights are expensive. Like, I literally had a $638 light bill. I'm trying to figure out what to do at this point. And, like, the government has no answer. It's, like, literally quiet silence.
The Trump administration put the eviction moratorium in place last summer, and public health officials at the CDC in Atlanta have extended it three times.
The Supreme Court has signaled it can't be extended without an act of Congress. But with Congress heading toward their summer break, that possibility appears to be slim.
Well, and that sort of brings us to this weekend, right? Because, you know, as of Friday night, Saturday morning, tomorrow night, there is no longer going to be a federal rule keeping your landlord from kicking you out, right? I mean, is that a possibility? Would your landlord evict you?
He already told me, like, if I don't have any type of money for him on the first, that he's going to be putting out a 5 to 10 day eviction notice. And I mean, I can't be mad at him because, like, it's all fair. Like, if I was the one that ran these apartments, I'd be looking for my money too. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I understand where you're coming from, but, like, I just need leniency just for, like, give me, like, 3 to 4 weeks or just this month just so I can, like, give you something.
Right. I imagine it feels completely insurmountable. What do you say, though, to someone? Like, can I just ask you what you would say to someone who hears this and thinks, I mean, sorry. Yeah, that stinks. But, you know, it happens. Your landlord might have financial obligations as well. Shouldn't it be on them to get some grant money from the government to replace the money you owe them? It's been a year. Like, get a job.
Right. I feel like at that point, like, it's understandable because, like, you're looking from a viewpoint of, like, what is your need? And, like, I literally filled out 64 job applications in 1 month and only heard from 2 people. I was denied more than 10 jobs, and I actually have a good background. I don't have any criminal record. Every job I've had has been a nonprofit, and I have good reviews. You would think it wouldn't be this hard to get a job, like, a simple job. I mean, just working at, like, a food restaurant, I'm even getting denied from there. It's just, that is the stress for me. And, like, saying, like, go get a job, like, okay, we're out here trying and you're still denying me. So,
right, like, it's not a lack of trying is what you're saying.
Yeah. And I mean, when I say jobs are taken up for grab, like, really fast, it's gone. Like, if you don't catch it the first day, it's over. But, like, I need, like, at least some type of help because I don't know what else, like, what is the option after this? Either I'm going to be going back to my car.
Is that an actual possibility? If you get evicted, you'd have to go back to living in the car? Is that's one of your options?
Yeah, that is the option after this. That's going to be the option.
The South is struggling. Florida, Arkansas, and Louisiana have the highest rates of infection in the country.
We're, like, number one with the COVID out here. So it's like nobody is allowing nobody to come in their house again. Is back on lockdown.
God, which puts you that much farther from having your kids back with you, I suppose.
To me personally, I feel like I would rather them be somewhere where they don't have to go through that struggle again because it was really hard for, like, to eat every day, to get money, to, like, support them, to get gas, food, water, making sure they have clothes on their back, you know, because, like, we couldn't wash every day. So, like, I literally could feel the weight of the sweat from us in the seats. Like, after being in the car for so long, you know, and, like, we had no AC. So we're in there, like, dying. And like the little bit of relief that we did have, that was air was going on the lake to sit under a tree, you know, to get that breeze coming through. Sleeping there at night, not having gas. Like, I'm trying to do the best that I can to stay up and not ever go back to where I was.
Wow. And as we speak, it sounds like lawmakers in Washington might try to extend the eviction moratorium later today. But from what we're hearing, the timing could be so tough that even despite their intentions, they might have to pick it up next week. So in the meantime, millions of Americans wondering if this could be the weekend when their landlord says, sorry, no more. Tarianna Julian Clark there in Louisiana, I really appreciate you for sharing your story. I think it's really important for people to hear, and we're rooting for you.
I appreciate it.
Next up on Start Here, 200 down, 20,000 to go. Why people who risked their lives to help the U.S. can't even get a ride out of Afghanistan. We're back in a bit.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
For the last several days, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been on a big foreign trip to India, which makes sense. India is a huge country, but also Kuwait. And the reason Kuwait is an especially big deal to us right now is, remember how we're leaving Afghanistan? We're getting out.
More than 90% of American troops now out of Afghanistan.
And suddenly, thousands of translators and informants and people who have helped the U.S. all these years, they're desperate to flee their country.
Real fear that once American troops leave, the Taliban will come after them.
I'm playing with my life. If you work a single day for a coalition forces, if you support a single day for your coalition forces, they will kill you.
The thing is, the U.S. hasn't volunteered to house all these people. Instead, we've asked Kuwait to step up. ABC's Connor Finnegan was actually along for the trip with Blinken. He's making his way back right now. Connor, I can hear the sounds of the airport behind you. Are interpreters on their way back to the U.S. as well? Like, what is their status?
Brad, that first group of Afghan interpreters and their families are arriving this morning in the U.S. They're being sent to Fort Lee in Central Virginia. There's about between 200 and 250 of them. And this group is part of the 2,500 in total that will be housed in the U.S. in the coming weeks.
It's a race against time. How fast can the Biden administration evacuate Afghans who helped U.S. forces before the Taliban finds them and takes revenge?
These are folks who've been vetted. They've been cleared by the embassy. They'll be processed between 7 to 10 days at Fort Lee and be granted U.S. visas to start a new life over here in the U.S. But these 2,500 Afghans are just a drop in the bucket. There are approximately 20,000 Afghans who have applied for what's called a special immigrant visa, and they, along with their families, are eligible to come to the U.S.
But our message is clear.
The Biden administration has committed to moving this first group to the U.S. because they're so far along in the process.
There is a home for you in the United States, if you so choose. And we will stand with you just as you stood with us.
They say that there's another 4,000 Afghans and their families who, though stationed at bases overseas, either U.S. military installations in other countries or directly in these other countries, but they don't have an agreement yet to do so.
And so right now we don't have anything to offer in terms of the size of that group, areas to where they may be relocated.
That was partly why we were on the ground in Kuwait.
We are talking to a number of countries about the possibility of temporarily relocating these applicants as the process is complete. It
takes Secretary of State Blinken trying to get an agreement from the Kuwaiti government to house Afghans at one of the several U.S. military installations in that country. But he walked away from yesterday's meetings without an agreement. But the big issue here is that they're running out of time. They say that these evacuation flights all have to happen before the U.S. military withdrawal is complete by the end of August, and that's coming soon.
Well, and that's the thing. So you mentioned a lot of numbers there. 250 people, you know, arriving in the U.S. right now. 4,000 people they're looking to send to bases in places like Kuwait and around the Middle East. 20,000, though, total. I mean, what happens if these people don't get transported quickly enough? What happens if someone doesn't get out?
Brad, I mean, really, the fear is that they will be targeted.
If we leave those behind who pledge their allegiance to us in the United States of America, they will be slaughtered.
Over the last few years especially, we've seen at least 300 cases of Afghan interpreters being killed by the Taliban or their affiliated, you know, forces because of their service to the U.S.
I will be definitely killed by them after the withdrawal.
Now, the State Department says of that 20,000, only 10,000 have actually really conducted the process. The other 10,000 still need to file different pieces of paperwork or complete, you know, different forms. The department has only said that they're evacuating less than 5,000. And so the State Department has essentially said we can't help them. And every day the Taliban is growing stronger, gaining more territory across the country. And there's real fear now that Afghanistan will devolve into a civil war.
The Taliban is sweeping through the country, a spate of violence worse than any seen in years.
All of that puts these people and their families at risk. I asked Secretary of State Blinken when we were on the ground in India whether or not the country is headed in the wrong direction. He wouldn't say yes outright, but every indication that he gave is that things are not looking good right now. He maintained, however, that the U.S. was withdrawing because at the end of the day, the future of Afghanistan at this point in time is up to the Afghan people.
Right. And really, for the last couple of decades, when you ask that question, what's happening in Afghanistan, that has real implications, not just for long term, but for like short term American interests, citizens of ours on the ground. Now, our people are out, but these people who have given so much time and trust and really service to us for these two decades, their lives could hang in the balance. Connor Finnegan at the airport, getting home. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
If you've listened to the podcast The Dropout, you know there are certain industries that investors cannot wait to be a part of. They'll throw money at someone who says they can create the world's easiest blood test, which means theoretically, they might be a little less skeptical when a charismatic founder says, "I have all the answers." Well, blood is not the only game in town. In a world where every car maker is going electric, whoever makes the world's most powerful batteries will be the winner. Many investors thought that winner would be this new company called Nikola.
A man who once vowed to transform how trucking worked from the ground up.
For every doubter out there that said that there's no way this is true, absolutely, how can that be possible? We've done it.
But yesterday, the founder of Nikola was indicted with federal prosecutors saying he's not some mad genius, he's just a liar. ABC senior investigative reporter Aaron Katursky is with us. And Aaron, I apparently don't know my billionaires enough. Who is this guy?
This is Trevor Milton, Brad. And if you listen to him, Nikola began with his vision to help the environment, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by building battery and hydrogen-powered trucks, electric vehicles, that could eventually replace, you know, long-haul semis and pickup trucks.
Everything kind of starts when you're young, and you have a lot of paths in life you can take, but this was my path, to transform how trucking works.
Everything about particularly had a vision for a pickup truck that he called Badger, and a long-haul semi that he called Nikola One, that in fact he introduced to the world in December 2016.
How do we take the past and improve on it? And that's what the Nikola One does.
And when he did, he made a series of claims that prosecutors now say were either false or misleading, including the idea that this long-haul semi was a fully functional truck.
That's 300 miles on an off-road vehicle. It can run different routes, different freeways, based upon weather conditions. This will potentially be able to change the owner-operator's income by up to over 50%, which is really awesome.
In fact, it was not fully functional.
Today's criminal charges against Milton are where the rubber meets the road.
And prosecutors said the only time it actually was able to drive was when they brought it up a hill and rolled it down so they could film a commercial.
Milton claimed that Nikola was producing hydrogen, when in fact it was not.
And that's the other part of this story, Brad. Prosecutors say there's no vision of helping the environment. The only vision that Trevor Milton had, they said, was enhancing his status as an entrepreneur.
Milton became increasingly preoccupied
with keeping Nicholas' stock price high.
But you're saying that he's claiming, I got this amazing truck, but allegedly then it just had wheels and a frame and gravity? Like, that's all he had?
Prosecutors said it didn't have key components like motors or even some of the fun gizmos for the dashboard that he was pointing out. They said they just weren't real. And in fact, Nikola was one of those companies, Brad, that became a stock market darling without ever having done anything.
Okay. At what point would you share with us then what you had, again, had told me, that you were ready to announce some orders many times bigger than the $800 million order with Anheuser-Busch?
We're close. And I'll tell you what, as soon as we're ready to announce it, we'll give you a ring so you can we can revisit that in person again. But
it didn't build anything. It didn't produce anything. It was all on Milton's word and flash and his style for talking in sweeping terms.
We own our own hydrogen facility that we're building. We own our own plant, our own conversion, our own distribution, and now our own manufacturing of the truck. A lot of people have asked, why'd you do that? Well, once again, it wasn't about improving on the candle. It was about totally redesigning what that meant and to become a flashlight.
And as you know, companies, when they go public, you know, oftentimes the acronym IPO, the initial public offering.
Sure.
When Trevor Milton wanted to take Nikola public beginning in 2019, he used a different investment vehicle known as Special Purpose Acquisition Companies, known by the acronym of SPAC. And they have a lot less regulation attached to them about when founders and CEOs can start touting stock. And so right away, without any kind of grace period, Trevor Milton started making claims on television, on podcasts, on social media to whoever would listen.
Trevor, let's start with the transaction that has brought you to this desk this morning, which is
to try and tout Nikola and its ability to produce these electric vehicles.
We're really the only hydrogen, zero emission, battery electric, heavy duty truck manufacturer in the world. So we've the SPAC had incredible results yesterday. For me, I was really happy. It's more of a retail play.
And it turned out, Brad, that a lot of investors were listening. Not institutional investors, but retail investors. Everyday folks who had lost money or had been hurting financially because of the pandemic. And prosecutors said they were the ones that rushed to invest.
Well, and so he's being charged with 3 counts of criminal fraud. Prosecutors say he lied about, quote, nearly all aspects of the business, which you don't get more sort of definitive than that. What is Milton saying?
He says he's innocent, and his lawyer said that this is just the government criminalizing ordinary, common business behavior. And in the end, they said that Milton will be vindicated. But prosecutors listed example after example where he lied.
Corporate officers cannot say whatever they want on social media without regard for the federal securities laws.
And they said those lies were relied upon by individual investors, some of whom lost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, and a few of whom actually lost their retirement savings because they believed what he was saying about Nikola and rushed to invest their money. This really does seem to represent a shot across the bow by federal prosecutors for another one of these industries where something may sound too good to be true.
Well, and you talk about retail investors, you've got more companies out there right now that have made it easier for regular people to invest in stocks super quick. And if everyone is trying to hop on the next big thing, if everyone is trying to beat Wall Street bets super quickly, you wonder if that makes an even more fertile playing ground for alleged hucksters out there looking for quick investments. Aaron Kucharski, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay, we're going to take one more break. When we come back, they hooked him. But will it make collegiate sports head south? One last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially 4 trials facing former President Trump as he makes his 3rd bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability? And would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. When you think of the American Southeast, how far west does it go? Is Texas in the Southeast? What about Oklahoma? Well, yesterday, the Southeastern Conference, home to some of college football's most powerful teams, extended invites to the University of Texas and Oklahoma University.
One football team that's been great, and another team that's one of the biggest brands in college football. So the rich get richer.
And remember when European soccer fans were freaking out about the idea of a Super League where the best teams would just play each other all the time? This has been compared to the American version of that, but it looks like this form of the Super League could actually happen.
Major shakeup could be on the way in the world of college sports.
You see, earlier this month, Texas and Oklahoma actually asked to join this conference, even though they already have one. They're in the Big 12 with other Midwestern teams. They actually founded this conference.
I've been trying to tell people everybody wants to play in the SEC, man.
Big 12 leaders were predictably furious. They accused these big schools of betraying their neighbors and illegally negotiating, but even more interestingly, they issued a cease and desist order to ESPN, which is owned by ABC's parent company, Disney.
Murray, touchdown Sooners!
To which you might say, wait, ESPN just reported on this, right? They're just reporters. What would they have to do with it? Well, ESPN owns the SEC Network, which makes a ton of money broadcasting these big Southeastern games. It also runs the Texas Longhorns Network, but it doesn't get nearly as much money when Texas plays other Big 12 games on Fox.
Down the edge, and Moore has got a first and goal for Texas.
So the Big 12 says, don't you see what's going on here? ESPN is trying to destabilize this rival conference, hoping that eventually every big school plays on their channels. ESPN flatly denies this, so do all the other parties involved. The schools can't join for at least three more years unless their own conference falls apart in the meantime. Some cloak and dagger allegations. I'm in it for the soap opera stuff just as much as the football games. Start Here is produced by David Ryan, Kelly Therese, Josh Cohan, Ariel Chester, Tara Gimbel, David Toledo, Madeline Wood, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Liz Alessi, Eric Johnson, Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia DeShishku. Special thanks this week to Justin Fischel, Chris Berry, and Sony Salzman. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.